Christy handed the map back.
I just think we need to be more on guard than ever.
The first danger came all too soon. Once they had penetrated the outer growths of the city, it became apparent that the surface was uninhabited. It was also apparent that the thickness of the vegetation, mixed with the concrete debris and remains of old Seattle, would make it imperative that they send a scout to find a route and spot any immediate dangers. Ryan had noticed that Doc was finding the going hard, despite his best efforts to keep pace, and the line was straggling and dangerously loose, with JB dropping too far back for safety. Ryan halted them on a street corner, where the remains of an apartment building was all that stood visible and identifiable in the foliage. The plants were multicolored at their heads, but all had the same thick green stems, the size of Ryan's arm, with sticky follicles that secreted a sweet-smelling sap. It was a milky white at the tips of the hairs, and all the companions were cautious to avoid contact with the stems, in case the sap was in some way toxic to the skin. The way had been fairly easy up until this point, as the remains of old roads and sidewalks were still visible, and hadn't been infested with the thick-stemmed plants, instead being covered by a carpet of what appeared to be a creeping vine of some kind. It had a sentience within it, and a couple of times the tendrils responded to the way Doc's sword stick came down, the smaller point concentrating the weight it carried, enough to cause the tendrils to rear and try to grasp at the cane, wrapping themselves around its length. The building on the street corner still had three floors upright, even though the rubble from the wrecked upper floors spilled across one part of the intersection, cutting it off from an easy access. The lobby of the building was intact, the plate glass door standing open, miraculously in one piece, although pitted with small stones that had fused to the glass, and a web of minute cracks that connected the stones.
We'll rest up here. We need to wreck the surrounding area before we go any farther. It's getting thicker out there.
And more humid and sweet-smelling. We really need to find out how thick those mother plants get, because we can't risk what might be in that sap.
Want me, Rick?
The one-eyed man nodded.
Take a look at the map. Try and get us in the right direction, if possible.
Jack grinned.
She always rude if look hard enough.
Jack took the map from Ryan and studied it. Jack couldn't read well, but a diagram or map was a different matter. From the earliest days hunting on swamps and bayous down in Louisiana, Jack had learned to look at a diagram as he would a spore on a tree. The fact that there was little, if any, writing on the map made it easier for him to absorb. He handed the paper back to Ryan.
Hope not hide entrance too good.
There isn't an entrance constructed in the whole of the Deathlands that you couldn't find.
When the albino had slipped through the doors and disappeared noiselessly into the vegetation, Ryan and the rest of the companions made themselves as comfortable as possible in the lobby of the building. It wasn't difficult, as much of the furniture had been left intact. Only the elements that had penetrated this far, and the brave tendrils of plant life that had ventured into the less welcoming atmosphere, had had any effect. There were three large leather sofas scattered across the rich carpeting, now overlaid with mildew and growths of moss. The leather had a layer of dusty, almost verdigris-like spore, which J.B., Dean, and Mildred cleared from each one. Otherwise, they were probably as comfortable as the people had been who used this furniture before Skydark. Doc settled his weary frame on one of them, reclining until his head rested against one arm.
Wake me when young Jack returns, my dear Ryan. I fear I must rest.
Doc was already drifting off to sleep. Mildred moved across to him to run a medical eye over Doc's dressings.
Not before I check those wounds.
The wounds hadn't been deep, but when any antiseptic procedures were at a premium, Mildred could never be too sure. Once she made sure that the wounds weren't infected, Doc quickly fell asleep. Christy noted that Ryan himself looked weary.
I think we all need that.
I'll take first watch, Dad.
The one-eyed man assented, and they rested while Dean and Mildred took the first watch. Jack skipped across the roots of stunted trees and over the beds of creeping vines with scarcely an impression, and no sound at all. Despite his heavy boots, he was able to distribute his weight in such a way that he left no sign of his passing. The details of the map were in his head, and he applied them to the landscape around. As he moved farther into the forest, the thick-stemmed plants were joined in the landscape by small, stunted trees with no height, but trunks at least three times the thickness of any other tree Jack had ever seen. Their gnarled and twisted roots broke ground regularly, surfacing beneath the creepers to form an ankle-breaking obstacle should an unsuspecting foot catch in them. It was impossible at times in this part of the old ville to tell where the buildings began and ended, What hadn't been destroyed in the New Cost, or Earth movement, had since been taken down and crumbled by the inevitable forward march of the forest, the muddy heart of post-Skydark nature claiming back what man had destroyed. Jack scaled one of the trees. It rose no more than 8 feet from the ground, but by standing on the topmost branch, which was thick and sturdy in relation to the trunk, and so could easily support the slender albino, Jack was able to see through the dense growth of stalks, and also through the multicolored heads that spread their sweet yet pungent scent across the air. It was while he was balanced on this branch that he saw them, although, to be accurate, he heard them before sighting them. There was little noise in the forest. It seemed that any animal life found it hard to survive in the conditions, and so there were only insects and a few small birds. Their chatter and high-pitched noises were soon cut out of his hearing by Jack's attuned ears. They were still registering, but were disregarded as he searched for other sounds. Like the humming. No, not humming. A chanting of some kind. Jack could make out sounds formed into words of some kind, but not in a language that he could recognize. There were a variety of male and female voices. This he could tell by the differing frequencies. Jack scanned the horizon, drawing close into the large oval leaves on the branch as he did so, instinctively using as much cover as possible, even though it was unlikely that they would be aware of his presence. It was proving hard to locate their direction, as the trees and plants acted against each other, the wood becoming a sound dampener, and yet the plants and their flowers acting as sounding boards, amplifying and distorting the sound as the party approached, making its true direction difficult to determine. Jack's instincts told him to keep his attention focused on the direction from which he thought it had originally come, so he turned back that way and carefully scanned the horizon. His eyesight was slightly impaired by his lack of pigmentation, but his other senses more than compensated for this by being ultra-sensitive, finely honed by his years of hunting and stalking. It didn't take him long to locate them. They were crashing through the trees and brush with little regard for stealth, chanting loudly. They numbered 12 in all, 6 groups of 2 with a pole strung between them. Their clothing was a multicolored collection of old rags, dyed brilliant purples, oranges, pinks, and yellows, which mirrored the plants around. They had probably found a way of extracting the color from the flowers and using it as a dye. They had obviously been hunting, as they had something strung from the poles, something just a little too obscured by their own bodies for Jack to make it out. Something that looked vaguely like an animal. The alarm bells sounded in Jack's brain. How could they have been hunting an animal, when all his senses screamed that there was no animal life in this forest? Jack assessed their direction. They were headed for the outskirts of the old ville of Seattle, and presumably out to the other ville, the one with the stoop name. And there was only one route out, one that would take them right past Jack's companions. The albino slipped down the tree. He had seen enough to judge the party. That they had been hunting suggested knives or blasters. This made them a danger, one he had to warn his companions about before the party reached the old apartment building. Jack had a good start on the hunting party and was faster. He was back at the ruined apartment block in next to no time and outlined what he had seen.
Sounds like these aren't from the ville we want.
Yeah, they don't sound like the bastards we met on the way, and they're headed the wrong direction.
Think they're from the other ville?
Possibly. Best thing is to take cover, let them pass. Watch them. No point wasting ammo on a firefight that might bring more forces down on us from who knows where.
The lobby of the old apartment building sheltered them well from the path through the old street, as the pitted and scarred glass was opaque, and the most accessible path through the forest undergrowth was some yards from the glass doors. Still, Ryan was concerned that the oncoming party of hunters may spot signs of the companions passing, so he ordered the companions onto the second floor of the building, going ahead to check that the stairwell was safe, and that enough of the floor on the first level was intact and stable enough to support their weight. The windows on that level were blown out, but the foliage entwined around the building was thick enough to provide them with cover as they observed the passing hunting party. Jack slipped out the front of the building to check for any obvious signs of their passing and entering the ruined building. He wouldn't have time to completely cover their tracks, but as this was a war party returning home, he felt fairly sure that covering the most visible signs of progress would suffice. While Jack did that, Ryan took the old stairwell beside the apartment building's elevators. It was sturdy and still firm beneath his testing feet. Christy and Dean followed, with Mildred, Doc, and JB at the rear. On the first floor, there were 5 apartments. In their time, they were fairly spacious and comfortable, But now they were covered in creeping vines, powdered with mildew and fungi spores, the fabrics and wooden furniture having long since capitulated to the humidity and fungi.